Good morning. I'd like to call the Friday, September 14th meeting of the California Coastal Commission to order. Could we start with a roll call, please?
Commissioner Blank.
Here.
Commissioner Bochco.
Here.
Commissioner Brennan.
Present.
Commissioner Caldwell.
Here.
Commissioner Kinsey.
Here.
Commissioner McClure.
Here.
Commissioner Mitchell.
Here.
Commissioner Zimmer.
Here.
Chair Stone.
Here.
You have a call.
And I'm sorry, but the reason for the delay was there was a laptop stolen from here last night, so they had to put things onto a different computer and get things rolling, so great job, but it's too bad that they lost that. If anybody knows anything about that, please report into our AGR folks. So, staff, can we go through the agenda changes?
Good morning, commissioners. We just have one agenda change today. On page 13, item 8A, which is the consistency determination, 31-12, has been postponed. And that's the only item today. And then also, if anyone in the audience wishes to address the commission today, you must fill out a speaker slip, which can be found at the entrance to the hall. Once you fill it out, please give it to staff here at the table. And I also ask that you please turn off or put in quiet mode all cell phone devices. Thank you.
All right, thank you. We'll now move to general public comment. I have two speaker slips, Amy Nguyen and then Sandra Jarabek. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
There's a button right about there on the microphone. Up a little bit. Up, up, up. There you go.
Up.
You're on.
Thank you.
And please identify yourself for our
yes,
record.
Yes, Amy Nguyen, land use consultant here in Fort Bragg. Hello, commissioners. Thank you so much for being here. It's a pleasure to see you, get to know you a little bit. And I hope that what happened with the laptop is a one-time gig. I live here in Fort Bragg, land use consultant. I'm also here as a cyclist. I'm vice president of Mendocino Coast Cyclists, and I've started a mountain bike tour guide company in response to demand for people that have discovered that we have great trails right across the street, rivaling Tahoe, Santa Cruz, Oregon. Yay. I'm here to ask you, when you consider applications before you for access along the coast, you've seen some really remarkable trails and you've seen some really remarkable roadway along the coast. When you regard access issues, please also think about tires, two tires on the surface, and the safety that those two narrow tires need. It's gorgeous. We have touring cyclists riding up and down the coast all the time, mostly down the coast, the winds. It's narrow. You remember when we went from the Pygmy Forest down to Navarro and we had to pull over because of the emergency vehicle? That accident on Highway 1 at Frog Pond Road was between a car and a motorcycle. The day before, when the climate riders rode through, the cyclists, only more than 100 cyclists that rode through, on that same stretch of road, logging truck, car, cyclist, narrow road, narrower, less shoulder than this, slope on one side, cut bank on the other side. The girl riding the bike ditched off her bike because she would have been roadkill. Sorry, it's graphic. When you consider applications from Caltrans, please think about the two little tires on the road as well. Consider that our roadies are an endangered species. They need a little bit of help. We can mitigate wetland impacts. We can mitigate rare plants. You can do 4-to-1 ratio. You can't do 4-to-1 for our friends and family that are riding on the road. There are also opportunities sometimes for diverting the trail from the highway to a place perhaps along the coast. When we were up at the 10-mile bridge and you were on the other side of the rail, I thought I was going to yank you back because I thought, those cars are going to... We don't have a whole lot of cars, but they're going fast, and that K-Rail is going to stop one of those. Think about alternative ways to help our roadies get down the coast. This is a destination. It's also a commute, a way to commute, and I'd like for you to keep us in mind in that way. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And for the record, that was Commissioner Kinsey on the wrong side of the K-Rail. Sandra Jarabek?
Good morning, Commissioners. You know, I live in Belmont County, but I'm a senior jailbreak, and I want to thank you so much for coming all this way and spending all this time up here on the North Coast. There is quite a buzz about you in the bars and the restaurants.
You mean what we're doing?
Well, you know, actually, the waitress that waited on me last night said, oh, they're working such long days. That's good. This is, you know, it's great that you're here and that they know that. They all seem to know it. So, thank you. And thank you for the support you've expressed to me, some of you, about our situation with the violations in the failed Pacific Shore subdivision that are festering and losing out into all the public trust lands. This is that slide of the Pacific Shore subdivision, and I want to recap very briefly and have two requests for you, please. In 3 short years, the state acquired 51% of these lots, and that's that beautiful green spread throughout the subdivision. Those are the state lots. As you saw, the other morning, they are being impacted by off-highway vehicles. And there are other impacts. It would really help us if the commission could send a letter to the state agencies that stopped the acquisition program as a courtesy to the Board of Supervisors. That's a 3-2 vote that stopped the acquisition program after all those lots were acquired and after the water district for the subdivision was dissolved by local government. That's quite the irony. It would really help us if you would send a letter to the Coastal Conservancy and the Wildlife Conservation Board and copy it to all the electeds and appointees, and you know who I mean. So I would like to ask you, please, with all respect, to consider doing that as a board. Because you've seen what's going on there in part. And my second request to you is this. On those white lots that are still privately owned, and even on some of the gray lots, there are people living out there illegally. They have no sanitation. I don't even want to think about it. And the commission wrote, the commission staff wrote enforcement orders 6 or 8 years ago, and nothing has been done since to prosecute those orders. I can't understand why the Attorney General is not prosecuting, and I ask you to look into that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Commissioner McClure.
Yes, I would like to.
Hey, Billy. There it is. I would like to make comment on this also as a supervisor in Del Norte County. We have an awkward situation that I'm not sure if maybe Chief Counsel could help me on. But Del Norte County actually has an adopted ordinance that they call no net loss, which is a requirement that a willing seller and a willing buyer on a piece of property are not allowed to exchange their selling point, because if it's the state that's buying the property, Del Norte County is actually saying you can't do that. So I need assistance there because I feel like it is outside the parameter of the Constitution. I also recognize that there are several enforcement issues that have been lingering in relationship to Pacific Shores of people. In fact, we even have a couple of people that have agreed to clean up their land, but we haven't followed through on it. And so I'm hoping that with the assistance of the Coastal Commission that we can get some clarity here, because I feel that the property is languishing, and and it is significant property. I think most of the commissioners, in fact, yesterday even when we were on our tour of the mill property, looked at the property and went, oh, we look like we're at Pacific Shores. And I think that we understand the significance of the property as far as it being the largest inland lagoon in California and on the Pacific Northwest, and would like to see it protected, but we don't seem to be able to get any enforcement, and I'm not sure where we go, if we need to go to state lands, what we need to do. And so with Sandra's assistance and with my, I guess, inquiry, how do we go about making sure that this land is protected?
Thank you, Commissioner McClure. I think with respect to the first question you answered about the local ordinance, under the Constitution, a local government can pass an ordinance. It doesn't bind the state in any way. My understanding is that the state entity, the Conservation Board, which was doing the purchasing by choice, honors local requests such as no further purchasing, but not because the local ordinance requires that it stop the purchasing. A local ordinance cannot bind a state entity. That's a matter of supremacy, of just as the state can't bind the federal government. So that is more of a political choice that's been made somewhere else. And again, that's not the Coastal Commission, so I don't know any more than that. With respect to other actions that are being taken on the property, as you know, there have been enforcement actions taken there. As you also know, there's ongoing extensive litigation over flooding and takings, which is a separate but related issue and certainly relates to the patchwork of ownership. And there are multiple cases that are have gone to trial, that are proceeding to trial. I think we just had another hearing that was delayed twice, but is coming up imminently in those cases. But it is something of concern to Coastal Commission staff, and I know Department of Fish and Game, because of our work with them in the other litigation, is very concerned about all of these issues as well.
So, Commissioner McClure, I can just add a little bit. On the political side, policy side, I hear what you're saying, and I think we can ramp this up and follow up on both of those questions you asked. One, the inquiries to WCB and the Coastal Conservancy about acquisition strategies that may be out there to reinvigorate that. And two, to follow up on the orders that have been issued by this commission. There are distinct issues going on. There is this flooding issue and the litigation concerns that have been unfolding, and it's complex, but there's also the orders that we have issued on existing development out there that haven't been enforced, and I am interested in following up on that. I've had a preliminary conversation with Lisa Hagee, Chief of Enforcement, about the status of those and how to move that forward. So we can certainly do that.
Well, I would just like to say that I would like that, if I have the support of the commission, that we continue to look at the investigation and the enforcement issues, and that we look further into the ability of the state lands to acquire these properties, because they are a significant piece of the coastal system, of the wetland system, and they are very, very treasured as far as I'm concerned. And it appears that it's a political issue. I get that. But at the same time, when I get a political issue, I also have a certain amount of pushback when I have that. So for me, I would like to ask this commission to support that we would continue to look at and encourage the acquisition of these properties, and that we would encourage the enforcement of these properties, because the significance of this coastal lagoon. Thank you.
Just a point of clarification, this is not an item on our agenda, so there's no official action that this commission can take at this point. Commissioner Zimmer.
Thank you. I was cognizant of that as the speaker was requesting that we do a letter, and I realized that we cannot collectively direct staff as a result of public comment to do a letter or to take any action. Is that right?
You can't take a vote to specifically request something. However, certainly a commissioner can, one or more commissioners can request a letter, and staff can agree to write such a letter.
Oh, thank you for clarifying that. I want to say that I did have the opportunity to visit this area with the commission last year when we had our meeting in Crescent City, and I was extremely impressed not only by the property and the resources that are around there, but also with the gravity of the problem and that's been so recalcitrant. And I was so appreciative of the private groups that have worked so hard to try to pay for the properties at value and bring them into public ownership, and very disappointed to hear that the local Board of Supervisors had taken this action to try to prevent further transactions. So I'm very supportive of Commissioner McClure's request that we do anything and everything we can, not only on the enforcement side, but also to try to unravel the appropriate actions to take on the part of the various state agencies so that we can move these acquisitions forward. Thank you.
So I think at this point, unless there's an objection from commissioners, perhaps that we can ask the chair and the executive director to find an appropriate way for the commission to weigh in on this issue.
I'd be happy to.
Thank you. Thank you.
That puts a smile on my face.
We like smiles.
We live for smiles. Ed Sander.
Excuse my slowness. I didn't quite hear you clearly, but anyway, I'm Ed Sander.
Pull the microphone up so you can speak into it. Thank you.
Thank you for hearing me. I'm Ed Sander. I'm here to speak on another facet of repurposing the former industrial lands of Georgia Pacific and the lumber mill. I'm involved with the preservation of the 10-mile haul road. Back in 1985. This is an issue that has not yet come before you. If due process comes to pass as it should, the state park's attempt to end run to remove this haul road will be abbreviated, and it will cease due process, and you will hear this issue. Back in 1985, when we drew up the master plan for McCarricker State Park, the haul road in its entirety was viewed as the central feature of the McCarricker State Park planning and development, and it was to be viewed as an alternative to transport path for getting bicyclists and pedestrians off of Highway 1. You've had the privilege now of driving Highway 1 up to 10-mile bridge, and you can see it's got short sight lines, quite narrow, very perilous for bicycles and secondary transportation technologies. It isn't right to mix automobiles and big RVs and so on with bicycles. It doesn't work. So anyway, the state park is attempting to dismantle the northern section of the haul road. This was attempted underneath the rug, but we've got to stop to it, and I hope you will hear this eventually. They had initially agreed to conserve this road, restore it, and put it together by fiat within the OPACE organization. They decided it was too expensive. Actually, we continued working here past Proposition 85 in hopes those funds would be utilized to restore this road. That isn't exactly the way it worked out. So anyway, I hope that when this comes before you, you will consider that this road, while they presented it as an abandoned piece of asphalt, is actually in superior condition to the one that is currently being used. And furthermore, whatever is going on within state parks, they're seemingly hostile to secondary transportation and have refused Caltrans assistance to improve the existing haul road that is in use, have stonewalled the effort to widen the bridge when the opportunity was there at the trestle to make accommodate bicycles accordingly. You know. Anyhow, I hope you can help us with generating correct coastal access, preserving it, and going forward with it. Furthermore, there is a geophysical issue here. The Hall Road has been in place for 100 years, and as such, it's become a physical dam that has checked the flow of sand for off the beach for 100 years. We essentially have a 100-year reservoir of sand outboard of the Hall Road. The removal of Hall Road has tremendous geological potential consequences in terms of the sudden release of an immense amount of sand into a region that is already vastly overburdened with sand due to historical events. And thank you for hearing me.
Thank you. That brings us to the end of general public comment. So we'll move on to energy, ocean resources, and federal consistency.
I have two items today as part of the deputy director report. First order of business is yesterday I provided you with two immaterial amendments and a de minimis waiver. We have received no comments or objections to the issuance of these, and so we're seeking your concurrence in the executive director's determination to issue these.
Thank you. Is there any objection to concurrence? Seeing none, the commission concurs.
Thank you. This week you heard a couple of public comments about a proposal by PG&E to conduct a high-energy seismic survey offshore of the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant. I thought I'd give you a little bit of information about that today, if I could, because I expect that you're going to hear a lot about this over the next month, and there's already starting to be quite a bit of press coverage about it. There are actually two projects. PG&E, which is the operator of the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant, proposes to conduct a survey offshore of Diablo Canyon. And then Scripps, on behalf of Southern California Edison, which is the operator of the San Onofre Nuclear Generating Station, is proposing to conduct a seismic survey off of in waters offshore of that nuclear plant. Both propose to conduct this survey work this fall, beginning in November. Now, these geophysical surveys are very similar to ones that are conducted by the oil industry that is looking for searching for oil and gas. The purpose of these particular surveys is to obtain data concerning the location, configuration, and dynamics of faults that could affect the integrity of the state's two nuclear power plants. The interest in performing these surveys began back in 2006 with the passage by the California legislature of Assembly Bill 1632. This bill required the Energy Commission to assess the potential vulnerability of the state's two nuclear plants to a major disruption, either due to aging or a major seismic event. The Energy Commission then subsequently issued a report concluding that geophysical seismic reflection mapping or other advanced techniques should be used to explore these fault zones at the two nuclear plants. And then the California Public Utilities Commission also supports that these surveys be undertaken. And then in 2008, the U.S. Geological Survey actually discovered a new fault right offshore of Diablo Canyon. And then in 2011, you know, we had the earthquake and the tsunami in Japan. And since then, there's been, you know, a particular interest now in the safety of these nuclear plants, you know, across the country. So these surveys are performed by using air guns. It's a pneumatic sound source that releases air into the water to generate a high-energy acoustic pulse. It produces a shock wave capable of passing through ocean waters and going as deep as about 10 miles into the seafloor. The air gun array would generate a very, very loud acoustic pulse at approximately 230 to 250 decibels at the source, about every 11 to 20 seconds that they're out there doing this. So there are significant coastal act issues associated with these surveys. Displacement of commercial and recreational fishing during the period that they're performing these surveys, the potential for harassment, injury, and even mortality to marine mammals due to these very loud underwater sound levels, and also in this case, unavoidable effects to newly created marine protected areas. Last month, the California State Lands Commission, after a very lengthy hearing, approved the first phase of what may be a two-phase, two-year seismic survey for PG&E. They're proposing to do the first phase starting this November, and it would cover about 300 square miles offshore of, in both state and federal waters offshore of that particular plant. The SONG survey is to use the same research vessel that PG&E is using, and they want to perform that survey during the same window this fall, if they can. And that survey would be limited to federal waters only and would cover about 1,300 square miles. So this is all to say that we have quite a bit of work that's going to come before this commission very soon regarding these. We plan to schedule the PG&E proposal for you next month for your consideration, and then the Scripps Southern California Edison one would come before you in November. And just a heads up that we're anticipating that these are going to be very lengthy hearings. And unless you have any questions about this at this time, you know, we can move on to the next item. Thank you.
All right, Commissioner McClure. And I'll remind commissioners this is not before us for action.
I do have a couple of questions. And that my first question is that it appears that in Peru, when this same ship happened and did its testing, that there were hundreds and hundreds of dolphins that beached themselves and died. And do we have that documentation? And my second question is that if we are doing this kind of testing on a fault line, do we have any documentation in relationship to causing a quake when we're testing on a fault line? When we're, because I know what I do when a loud sound happens to me. I jump up and I,
you quake.
You know, I run, I quake, I run to the nearest exit. So if we're doing this in a known quake field, because when I've looked at some of the maps and I can see all of the identified fault lines, and my concern is if we allow this kind of testing to happen, are we potentially jeopardizing the citizens of the coast and the animals and the creatures of the coast to a earthquake because of our testing?
My understanding that the answer to your second question is no. But these are great questions, and I think this is great for us to include this information as we develop our staff recommendation that we're going to be before you. We do have a representative from PG&E here today that may be able to answer that question.
Although, as Commissioner Stone reminded us, we don't have this agendized. It's not a public hearing on the item, so it's informational. Mm-hmm.
Well, so, Mr. Chairman, Mark Krause with PG&E. That same question was asked at the State Lands Commission, and the representative from Scripps Oceanography, who was there, said, no, and if you count the number of times these types of surveys are done across the world, you're probably talking of billions in terms of the number of times those guns have been fired, and there's never been an instance of that causing an earthquake. With regard to the porpoises, our folks have looked into this. We have Padre Consulting that's familiar with that work in South America. I don't believe it was the same ship. This ship is operated by, the ship we're using is operated by Columbia University and the National Science Foundation. And I don't think it was that ship, but there's a causal connection only because of time, and it wasn't terribly close in time as I understand it. People have just looked at that die-off and said, what was the cause, looked back and saw that there was some oil exploration prior to that.
Did the dolphins not die because of, like, the bends or something? I mean, wasn't that the cause of their death?
There's only been speculation that that may have been. I don't think there's any studies or anything that would show that it was related to those surveys. It was curious, and when they looked for a cause, that was the only thing people saw.
I want to
But we can get you more.
We're not taking testimony on this item today. If there's, I'm very concerned about give and take, questions and answers here, because all of this really needs to be appropriately on the record when it's been agendized. So if there's some general questions that commissioners want to ask that will lead us to questions that will help facilitate staff's presentation to us, I think that's okay at this point, but I'm going to draw a fairly tight leash on this so that we don't jeopardize our ability to move forward when we do get to a point of being able to make a decision. Commissioner Bochco.
Yes, just a question about, is there a possibility that you might direct us to whatever information, prior to the staff report, that maybe we could study up on existing documents about this? Just so, you know how stuff comes in so fast, it would be really nice to get a little head start on this in terms of doing our research and understanding some of the problems and issues.
Perhaps what would be helpful to you is that last month, the State Lands Commission took an action on this. Mm-hmm. They produced an EIR and also a staff report that was
great.
Adopted, and we could certainly make that available to you.
That
as
would
a,
be great.
As a start.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Brennan.
Thank you. Commissioner McClure and Botch had my questions, but one final question, or I guess for information was, and I do appreciate the heads up on the state lands and any other information you could get to us just a little bit ahead of time, because this is really going to be one of those tough ones. And I guess my final, in regards to state legislature able to kind of enact a law that affects perhaps marine mammal taking in that regard, is this, our body is supposed to be able to condition that this so-called with the permit to hopefully make sure that doesn't happen. And if it can't happen, I mean, if there's no way of ensuring that we can keep a marine mammal kill from happening, or do we have to follow the state mandate or the state the assembly law?
I think our staff recommendation will cover the legal authorities and that's what you can and can't do, it, and
great.
We'll definitely present that at that time.
Good, and that's why I wanted to bring it up, and maybe you can bring it into a little bit more
I can
focus.
Provide one additional piece of information from you. National Marine Fisheries Service is obviously reviewing this and has to issue an incidental harassment permit for this, and my understanding, I don't think that that's out yet, but my understanding is that if there's going to be enormous amount of monitoring of this, as you can imagine. If there is an observation of any marine mammal dying, it all stops. The whole survey comes to a halt. That is my understanding of how this is going to work.
Okay. And then I guess this technology has been used in mapping for oil, and are we able to, I guess, in that if some of this area had been looked at previously in terms of for oil and gas deposits, are we able to use some of those surveys, or does everything have to be done new with the newer technology? Does it? You couldn't say that this block of lease at 300 square miles, maybe 100 square miles had already been tested in the past or researched in the past. Would we be able to take that data and make it part of this, or do we have to go back and test the whole 300 square miles?
I don't know the answer as to whether these areas were actually looked at by the oil industry. There were a number of surveys that were done back in the early 1980s, but that's something I'll investigate. But my understanding is they need to do this all with this new better technology that they have today.
Okay. Thank you.
They're also, for PG&E, having to come quite close to shore because of the new fault that was discovered about a year ago is within state waters and very close to shore. So the PG&E survey is raising some particular issues because of having to come in so close to the nearshore environment.
And, Commissioners, I'd be a whole lot happier if we were asking things for staff to report to us and make part of the staff presentation rather than asking questions and expecting an answer here.
No, I wasn't.
Because this
is
not our record.
Thank you. I wanted to make sure that was researched and brought to us.
Good. We will take those questions on that point. Commissioner Zimmer.
I'm not going to be asking a substantive question, but it's obvious, given the response to today's report, which I appreciate, that this is going to generate a lot of questions. And so I would just like to request that we receive the clarification that I had asked for regarding the extent to which we can engage in conversation about this when people contact us over the next month, which they will. because if after having information I'm instructed that I cannot ask questions, I'm not going to be scheduling any ex partes. So people should just know that. Thank you.
Commissioner Blank.
I guess through the chair, for the staff, specific questions to if Ms. Dittmer can provide. The oil industry has a ton of data on acoustic seismic surveys. I think it would be helpful if we had from staff your version of what that is. That is, I'd like to understand the commission's tutorial. Should we just go look at the oil industry's, party line and say that is the case, or do you have an opinion, or did state lands? I'm not asking this here. I'm asking for information you could deliver to us. Am I being clear? I mean, the key issue. Director Lester, it seems unclear. So let me just, again, not asking questions, but of information to provide. One of the key questions is about the technology, specifically of offshore seismic surveys. These have been done for decades. The oil industry has their tutorials about what it is. We could go look at pictures of that. What I'm asking the staff is that the best source of information, or would you like to provide us the commission's view or state lands view or some environmental view of what that is, or else we are all going to go out and do our own research? That's question one. Is that clear about what I'm asking for?
I think so, and it's a two-part answer. I think going to the state lands report and their website and what they've produced would be an excellent place to start.
If you could point us to that specific section.
We can point you to that, and then from our standpoint, we will be presenting a staff recommendation that has our independent assessment of the best information that we can find.
Great.
At the time.
And then question two, again on data for this commissioner, is that, again, these surveys have been going on offshore California and in other places for close to 50 years, if not longer. Is there any research at all on the coast of California about, other than anecdotal information, about sea life kills? And I would like that kind of, it's real easy to get wrapped around the axle about, things have died or things haven't died, and it's here versus there. But there has to be some marine life research done. And I would like the staff to provide us the sum that we could go decide, and maybe your conclusion as well would be incredibly helpful, about whether this is anecdotal or there really is factual information on the damage to sea life via these acoustic surveys.
We anticipate that that'll be a central part of the recommendation.
Right. Was that directive enough?
That was lovely. Commissioner McClure.
My question was very closely related to Commissioner Blank's in relationship to this ship. Apparently has been around the world doing these kind of tests, and I would like to have some kind of report that tells me about the marine life reaction to these tests. And my second question is that based on the name of the canyon itself, Diablo Canyon, the Devil Canyon, the indigenous people and the early missionaries apparently were there, I was told, when they were trying to convert one another, and earthquake happened, a tidal wave happened, and everybody knew that it was a very volatile piece of the coastline. So I would like to make sure that we have a very accurate or detailed record of the indigenous people's interpretation of that land and of how that land has interacted with people since we've recorded history, but even before our recorded history, because I know that the indigenous people of that area understand the significance of those fault lines. So somehow I want that incorporated into the record. Thank you.
Thank you. I see nothing else from commissioners. Ms. Dittmer, is that your report?
You have enough now?
I think I'm going to be up all night for the next month.
All right, so we go to the North Coast District now.
Good morning, Commissioners. Item 9 is the North Coast Deputy Director's Report, and this morning we distributed a pink addendum with the listing of administrative items for your concurrence. There are three items, including a permit waiver and two immaterial amendments, for your consideration. We're aware of no controversy regarding these items, and we recommend that the Commission concur with the ED's determination to grant the waiver and immaterial amendments.
Thank you. Is there any objection to concurrence? Seeing none, the Commission concurs.
That brings us to item 8A, which is the briefing on the City of Fort Bragg specific plan for the Georgia Pacific Mill site. Yesterday, you had the opportunity to get a firsthand look at the site during the Commission's field trip, and we're very appreciative to Marie Jones, the city staff, and the Georgia Pacific staff for providing the tour for the Commission. As was mentioned during the tour, the city has been involved in a multi-year process to develop a specific plan for the area. Currently, the site is zoned under the LCP for forest products industry, and the LCP contains a provision requiring that before any specific rezoning can occur, the specific plan that's underway needs to be adopted and brought to the Commission in the form of an LCP amendment. So eventually you'll be acting on that specific plan. Before I present the rest of our remarks, our Executive Director would like to say a few words about this item.
Yeah, thanks, Bob. I just wanted to highlight that this speaks to that LCP amendment process question that we've been talking about over the last year, and in particular when we first started working with League of Cities and CSAC about issues around LCP amendment procedures, one of the questions raised was, is there an opportunity to get more feedback loops between the Commission itself and local government in the earlier stages of the process? And so this particular hearing and the two hearings we had in 2009 on this site are examples of that. So we've been trying to look for opportunities when we can bring larger LCP amendment items that are pending locally before they're going to be submitted to you to have opportunities for feedback. So obviously there are, you know, questions about change over time and the Commission changes itself. I don't know if any Commissioner Blank was here in 2009 when we had those briefings, but so there are issues, and but at the same time we want to try to maximize the opportunity for you to give input into the process at this point, and that's why we're here today. So Bob had a couple other framing remarks.
Yeah, as we talked a bit about at the tour, this represents a unique opportunity for coastal planning, where you have 400 acres of almost completely vacant land adjacent to the heart of a coastal town with 3.5 miles of spectacular shoreline. And so we've been, as Charles has indicated, very engaged with the city staff. There were two previous briefings, as Charles mentioned. Those occurred in August and December of 2009. The consistent theme of the commissioner's comments that was expressed at those two briefings was a sense that the plan should provide for more open space and habitat. There have been changes to the plan since then that do add habitat and open space. Just to kind of frame the issues that will be important in the LCP amendment, certainly the one of the chief concerns is whether the plan would really maximize coastal access consistent with the coastal access public access policies. Does the proposed mix of land uses provide for sufficient land for the priority uses under the Coastal Act, which, given the characteristics of the site in this case, would primarily mean visitor-serving facilities? And would all the changes necessary to modify, relocate, remediate contamination, and enhance the various wetlands that you observed out on the site, would those be consistent with Coastal Act wetland and environmentally sensitive habitat protection policies? The proceedings today, I believe first you'll hear from Dave Turner, who's the mayor of the city of Fort Bragg. Then Marie Jones will present details of the plan, and Tim Murphy of Georgia Pacific will give you a status update on the contamination remediation efforts. I'll also note that Mr. Tom Landfar of the Department of Toxic Substances Control is here in the audience, and should there be questions for Mr. Landfar about DTSC's review of the remediation efforts, he's available. For the public, there will be an opportunity for some public testimony on the item, and we're hoping that the Commission will be able to provide feedback for the city as they move forward on the process. And so with that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to welcome Mayor Turner to the podium for his presentation.
I do not have speaker slips from anyone from the city's presentation, so please, if you would fill out speaker slips when you're done with the presentation. And how much time would you like?
Four minutes. Oh, for 20 minutes.
Right. Mr. Mayor, good morning.
Vice Chair Stone, commissioners, I'm so glad you were able to get out to the site yesterday. I know you'll take home with you this.
And please, each speaker, do identify yourself for our record.
I'm sorry. Dave Turner, Mayor of Fort Bragg. I tell people this twice a month, but. I know you'll take home with you this unbelievable opportunity we have here, and we count on your partnership in helping us get this right. I can't thank you enough for coming to the Mendocino Coast and the long trip you made. As my mother-in-law says, it's easier to get to heaven than it is to Fort Bragg. The remoteness is part of who we are on the North Coast. Those who can survive without a shopping center learn to depend on each other and to appreciate their local businesses. It also makes us a little bit ornery, but that's part of our charm. I want to thank Dr. Lester for his efforts in making this Mendocino Coast meeting happen. And Dr. Lester, in case you don't know it, your North Coast staff is tremendous. I think maybe the work Bob Merrill, Jim Baskin, and Tamara Giddick have been doing with the city will become a blueprint for working with cities in the future. And lastly, I want to acknowledge the city's appreciation for the late Peter Douglas, who visited Fort Bragg often and was supportive of and enthusiastic about the city's mill site reuse planning efforts. And Commissioner McClure, thank you for your efforts in getting this meeting here on the coast. Now that you've seen this site, 430 acres on the coast of Fort Bragg, a third of our town, I ask you to look at its proximity to the town itself. We envision a seamless connection to our coast that has been fenced off for over 100 years. A little more housing on the north end, rolling out from the Fort Bragg, the only Fort Bragg neighborhood that is west of Main Street. A 30-year build-out that will only become homes as the demand arises. And remember, it's easier to get to heaven. Fort Bragg believes in neighborhoods. We don't allow vacation rentals, so homeowners will be our neighbors. Our problem is not how to deal with a mad rush to snap up homes on the coast, but how we'll create demand. The lumber mill is the reason the town is here. It was the economic engine of Fort Bragg, responsible for 2,000 jobs at its peak. Not to mention all the related employment that goes along with that much industry. We've seen a 30% drop in median income since the closure of the mill. 66% of our families are low income, very low income, or extremely low income. I'm not smart enough to know what jobs we're going to be able to bring here, or what businesses will find Fort Bragg a good place to set its roots. But I do know that if we don't leave room, some light industrial like we were showing on the south end of the site, if we don't leave room, it'll never happen. We want triggers so that the westward expansion of the central business district can't happen until the occupancy rate is up in town. We don't want to hollow out our downtown. We've been working on how to reuse the mill site since I got on council 10 years ago. We've had over 150 community meetings, and although the plan is not finished product, a lot of effort, including Coastal Commission effort, has gone into it. We look forward to hearing your positive feedback and your critical feedback as to how we can make this better. I'm probably getting past my introduction assignment in community development. Marie Jones is going to pull the hook out here. I want to introduce you to Tim Murphy, who's going to do talk about the remediation effort, and then Marie will talk about the specific plan. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Go ahead and start, Tim.
Yep. My name is Tim Murphy with Georgia Pacific. I'm here today to give a brief. Thank you. a brief update on the remediation of the mill site. Georgia Pacific has been working with the Department of Toxic Substances Control, Tom Lampard with the DTSC. Next slide. Next slide. Perfect. Working with the DTSC, the mill site's been broken down into five operable units. Operable units A, B, C, D, and E. A is in green, received a no further action letter and has been transferred to the city of Fort Bragg, also known as the Coastal Trail Parkland Project, in January of 2010. Operable unit B is in purple up there. There's two or three small sections. No further action designation attained through the DTSC in July of 2008. OU C and D are in pink and tan and make up the majority of the mill site property. The DTSC approved OU C and D feasibility study in February of this year. And OUE, primarily made up of the mill pond complex, the southern ponds, pond 5, which we stood next to yesterday, and pond 9 on the north end. We drove by it. We submitted a draft OUE remedial investigation to the DTSC in August of this year, so just recently. Slide. Just for order of magnitude, you can see that a majority of OU C and D was approved for a no further action designation last year, OUA, obviously with the NFA. So a majority of the property has no further action designation with the DTSC. That is all the area highlighted in green. The remainder in blue and yellow is still in process. Next slide. Next steps, Georgia Pacific will perform an OUE baseline environmental risk assessment. End of this year, early next year, we expect to have that to the DTSC. Following the baseline risk assessment would be an OUE feasibility study. Following that would be remedial action plans, RAPs for both, for all three, OU, C, D, and E, and then those would flow through the CEQA process. Now I'll turn it over to Marie Jones.
Thanks, Tim. So as you, some of you are aware, Georgia Pacific did...
And I'm sorry, please state your name for the record.
Oh, I'm sorry, yes. I know that too. Marie Jones, Community Development Director for the City of Fort Bragg. And as Dave Turner did mention, we have been working on this specific plan for a number of years. About a month ago, Georgia Pacific withdrew their application, and so the city is very eager to get input from the commission about how we move this project forward. Obviously, when you were out on the site, a site visit is actually worth 1,000 pictures, I think. I have a few pictures here that show the site. It is a very industrialized site. You got a sense of the immensity of it, I think, on the tour. It's quite large. And it's obviously the ocean waterfront for the city of Fort Bragg. I've been taking groups out there for the past 5 years on walking tours, and I can't tell you how many times people have literally come to tears after seeing their own oceanfront for the first time in their life. The city of Fort Bragg has about 7,000 residents. There are 16,000 residents on the coast that are served by Fort Bragg. It's a small community of 2.7 miles. The mill site is 400 acres. It's about a third of the city, but it's actually about 60% of the coastal zone, so it's a significant portion of the coastal zone within the city of Fort Bragg. As Dave Turner mentioned, it does have 3.5 miles of coastline, and the mill operated for a significant amount of time here from 1885 to 2002. At its peak, it had 12,000 jobs. I think there are about 4 out there right now, all security jobs. As was mentioned, we have had a number of community meetings on this project, and the project is complicated. It's more than just a specific plan. It also involves the remediation of the site, the mill pond complex, and the reorientation of pond 8 and pond 5, and the restoration of the stream corridor there. The Coastal Trail Project itself, which is an 82-acre project and will have 4.5 miles of public access, is a very complicated project in its own right. We also have a project called the Noyo Center that the city is working on. We bought 11 acres for that, and there's a poster board on the wall here if you want to look at the end of the meeting. And then we're also looking at doing an industrial arts center at an old dry shed out there. So the city has been working on this project in many venues, but obviously we've had a lot of community participation in the community. The city council and city staff believe very strongly involving the community in all our planning efforts because we're doing this project for the community. I put together a few slides of some of the maps. Actually, this is only about a third of the maps for the site that have been developed over the past few years. And I actually have 3 slides of maps, if you can believe it. I could have brought 5. And it has progressed, but there are some commonalities throughout all of these plans. A lot of them have talked about having residential development in the Northern District to extend the West neighborhood onto the site, the extension of the Central Business District onto the site as well, and then the concept that this southern area would have a major jobs component. And those themes have actually ran throughout the project as we've moved forward. As was mentioned, in 2009, we brought a plan to the commission and really heard a lot of feedback at that meeting that have been incorporated into the latest version, the 2012 version. I don't think that this plan is cast in stone even at this point. We consider this a preliminary draft specific plan, and so we are looking for input. So let me just talk about some of the changes that were made as a consequence of the 2009 commission meeting that we brought this plan forward to you. One was to reserve ponds 9, which is this pond here, and ponds 5. In the previous plans, those ponds had been shown as basically developed. Daylighting the Maple Creek corridor all the way to the bay, that was another thing that was added. Establishing a 100-foot-wide, 3,000-foot-long wildlife corridor through there. Adding an open space buffer around Pond 9 and around Pond 9 and not allowing a development in there, and then also establishing a 0.3 urban park. So in general, there's more parkland and open space, but that's not all. There's also a lot less development. So we've reduced acreage for residential development. In previous plans, there had been residential development all around Pond 9 and Pond 5 and Pond 9 had been entirely residentially developed, so that's gone. We've changed mixed-use employment zone, which was this entire area here, and at the time we were looking at about 1.7 million square feet of development on the site in total. We heard loud and clear from the commission that that was not acceptable, and this was actually renamed as an urban reserve, and the goal is that this would be a future specific plan opportunity in 30 years, and no development would be permitted here except for the Noyo Research Center and a hotel. We've also reconfigured the light industrial area to avoid the mill pond, ponds 1 through 4. Trying to go fast here. And development limitations have also changed. I do want to really make it clear to everybody, obviously the commission knows, but people in the audience may not, that there is no developer for this project at this time. This is not a development plan. This is a land use plan. The city anticipates, based on past development trends in the city of Fort Bragg, that the development of this site would take 30-plus years, possibly as many as 40 years. So we don't anticipate development of this site occurring rapidly, partly because of the remoteness of the area, and also because the site is going to require significant investments of infrastructure that will make it difficult for development to occur, except for when market conditions are very strong. What the other changes in terms of the development is the original plan had 650 residential units. That was reduced to 520. Over the 30-year period, that amounts to about 18 new homes a year, or about 41 new residents in Fort Bragg, for an annual population growth of about 1.3%, which is a little more, actually, than the city of Fort Bragg achieves right now. It's almost double what we achieve right now. And the hotel rooms were reduced from 500 rooms to 450 rooms. The big reduction really happened in the commercial industrial space. As I mentioned earlier, there was 1.7 million square feet slated in the 2009 plan. Now there's only 795,000 square feet. In your packet, you'll also see, and I also did copy this for everybody in the audience, on the opposite of the land use plan, there is a development limitations table that details out exactly where that development would occur. What the FARs would be, the units per acre, et cetera, and how many acres are dedicated to each use. I thought that might be helpful for you. But even with 795,000 square feet, what we get, if we spread that over 30 years, is about 65 jobs per year, or an annual employment growth rate of 2.7%. It's about 1,700 jobs at the end of the 30-year period, which is essentially a little bit more than what we lost when the mill site was closed. So the objectives of this plan, way back in 2004 when I first started on this process, we did a community survey, and the number two items, the two top items that came out of that community survey were access to the coast, a coastal trail, which we are well on our way to accomplishing, and job growth. And so job creation is a major component of this plan, and all the job creation would be in this, mostly in the Southern District with a little bit with an extension of the Central Business District. The plan is designed to be sustainable, mixed youth, and smart growth. I did include in your attachment just the table of contents for our specific plan. The specific plan itself is about 150 pages long, and we have incorporated all of the latest smart growth concepts into this plan, the latest complete street concepts, low-impact development concepts. The site would be required to be developed by any developer that came to the project in a very sustainable manner, including such things as requiring passive solar and all new projects. So the list is quite long of the sustainable components of the project, and I think smart growth and mixed use have always been a very strong feeling in the community and amongst City Council. Coastal access and open space are obviously a very big and important objective of this project. Research and education, visitor-serving uses. There's a number of locations for visitor-serving uses right here, the pink areas here. Habitat protection and restoration is obviously a very large component of the project. And to make this project fiscally sustainable. In other words, it won't cost the city money for the project to be developed. It would all be developed on the developer's own dime because the city of Fort Bragg doesn't have money. In terms of open space for the site, because I know this is a special concern to the commission, I thought I'd talk briefly about the Noyo Headlands Park and Coastal Trail project. In 2010, the city acquired 82 acres, and that's shown as this area here and then this area here. We also have an irrevocable offer to dedicate, to take a portion of this central area so ultimately we can connect the trail up. Right now, we have about $6 million of funding that the city has already secured to construct this trail starting next year. We're at the 90% design stage, and we have a certified EIR. So my anticipation is this project will actually get developed next year after four long years of work. And even the trail is a very complicated project. There are cultural resources on the site. There are rare plants. We have a major stormwater issue from off-site, the mill site property, impacting the trail. And a huge restoration project. There's about 20 acres of the site that are completely paved or covered with gravel that we'll have to be restoring to native plants. So it's a pretty complicated trail project. In addition to that, we also have funds from Prop 84 to do the central section in 2007, and we anticipate that being a part of the Mill Pond Complex Restoration Project when that gets done by Georgia Pacific. In addition to that, we have the Maple Creek Riparian Area. This is a wetland. It's a jurisdictional wetland. The stream bed connection that will happen, that's the daylighted Maple Creek Corridor. There's also the Mill Pond open space and parkland. There's a town green that goes through towns. This is actually not a street. This would be a place where people could bike and walk through the neighborhood into the central area of the site. There's also a downtown park. There's a smaller downtown park, and then there's a neighborhood park on the project. And that is 38% of the site in total would be parks and open space. And look at that. I'm 2 minutes early. But that doesn't happen very often. So I guess, I don't know, do you open it for questions at this point? Should I stay up here?
Not just yet. Okay. We're going to take public comment, and then we'll bring it back to commissioners ultimately, and that's when commissioners will be able to ask questions. Okay. So I do have somewhere a number of speaker slips. We'll start with Doug Hammerstrom.
Good Where's that? Okay. All right. Well, thank you for meeting here on our beautiful coast, and glad that you've had the opportunity to see our part of the world, and thank you for your role in preserving the natural beauty and the ecosystems of the coast. And thank you for the opportunity for our staff to make this presentation to you. We've been engaged in this process for 10 years, as Mayor Turner said, and I haven't been on the council that long, so my involvement started even before I was on the council.
And would you please identify yourself?
Oh, sorry. Doug Hammerstrom. And I just wanted to point out a couple of things. One, that one of the planning principles that I think of in terms of what we wrestle with relates to your role in protecting ecosystems and the natural beauty of the coast, and we think of the principle of encouraging development within cities where city services are available. So we look at our approach to the land use plan as a balance between that idea of encouraging growth in municipalities where there are city services and the protection of the natural resources that is the focus of the Coastal Commission. And the other thing is, your staff has mentioned it, and that we've had this effort to work cooperatively with the Coastal Commission, and it really is important to us what your input is. We see that as a definite parameter of what our decision making. So the more that we have your input as we're going through the process of finishing up our land use plan, the better we will make our decisions. And so I really encourage you, and I don't know if your processes allow you, in addition to whatever comments you might have today, but if you go home and think of things, whether you are able to communicate those to your staff, because the staff will be communicating with our staff, and then we will have the benefit of that input as we have these future local meetings. And thank you again for coming to the coast.
Thank you. Rex Gressett, then Char Flum, and then Jim Tarbell.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I've got a bunch of notes here, but I'm just going to let that
go. Please identify yourself for our record.
Rex Gressett, I'm a citizen of Fort Bragg. I'm running for the city council. I'm largely running against the mill site plan. When I got involved in this, I started going door to door, and I found that the people of Fort Bragg were appalled by the development scale. I'm finding out today that in 09 you put pressure on them to scale it back from a outrageous development to a moderately outrageous development. But the basic thrust of this has been to create a development that would drive the process forward. And I understand that, and I think that the city is doing their best to make something happen out there. But the choice, the path that they've chosen to do this is very much against the best interests of the people of Fort Bragg. And I don't think that anybody has really represented the people, meaning the people that live there. City council meetings are very poorly attended. It's sort of an insider's group. It's people that are doing their best job to do the best that they can on the mill site, and certainly no one doubts their best intentions. But the people that are living in the town look up on 520 houses being built down on the mill site as a disaster. We have 43 homes currently in foreclosure and hundreds of vacancies and widespread city blight. We have a $15,000 per year per capita income. So since the failure of the mill site, incomes have dropped precipitously. We have a depressed community. We think of that. I'm just going to go ahead and speak as though I were representing the people. I think that I am. I hope that I'm being accurate about that. But the people believe that it is effectively establishing another community, a different community, a separate community from the city of Fort Bragg. They don't see it as being integrated into their own objectives. And I would, as far as the meetings go, those are meetings that are being, the meetings that they talked about, the public participation was largely within the context of the city council government. People did come to meetings initially on the mill site, and many ideas were proposed, things that would, in fact, drive the process forward. There were many good, excellent suggestions. Not one of those ideas that were held over the period of time were ever are part of this plan. This plan came from Georgia Pacific. It's a plan that is an accommodation to try and get things done. I understand that. But it is not it did not include public participation in any way. And there are many good ideas for open space, for intensive agriculture. They eliminated the possibility of even putting in experimental high-intensity agriculture out there, you know, sort of off the cuff.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. I have a lot to say about this, and we'll try and continue to communicate with the Coastal Commission.
Indeed. Shar Flume, Jim Tarbo, and then George Reinhardt.
Good morning. I'd like to really thank you people for coming to our area. It's been a great event for us to see you here. My name is Shar Flum, and I've been a 50-year resident of Fort Bragg. And I love my town, and I love the things that are potentially going to happen there. However, I would like to say a little bit about Measure C. I would like Measure C, as passed by the city of Fort Bragg, to be recognized by the commission and written into the local coastal plan by the Coastal Commission. That is my main request today. If there is a legal question, you might want to refer to the Dryden case. There has been recent legislation that provides cities with the options to choose their own destiny as far as issues like oil and fracking and other things. I would just like to say that in 1997, the election was held within the city of Fort Bragg, where unanimously the people of the city passed Measure C. It reads as follows. The purpose of this chapter is to provide a permanent ban within the city of Fort Bragg on all oil activities which relate directly to onshore and or offshore oil and or gas, development, production, and or infrastructure. In order to preserve and protect the environment and public health, safety, and productivity, there shall be no commercial or industrial facilities allowed within the city of Fort Bragg, the purpose of which is onshore and offshore oil and gas development activities, nor shall under the city of Fort Bragg a jurisdiction and under their jurisdiction and direction any permit be issued or any agreement be entered into that would in and of itself allow oil and or gas development to occur. Measure C was passed in 1997 and has been on the books for 15 years. It is the wishes of the people of Fort Bragg. They voted on it, and I would want the commission to revisit the denial of Measure C and to help us put it into the local coastal plan. I think it's one of the most important issues that the mill site is looking at. It would agree and give us some kind of protection against further industrialization of this area. It's the largest area on the coast, as you're well familiar with, and one that we treasure and want to protect with everything. Thank you. Thank you for being here. And thank you to the city staff for their hard work.
Yeah, go ahead.
Ma'am, I just have a question for you. I'm sorry. Were you implying that the mill site is going to, has a plan for some type of drilling?
I'm not implying anything. I'm saying that this would offer us protection over the long term in case that should become a possibility.
All right. Question for staff. Is, do we have anything in these plans? I guess the plan's not in front of us, or is it? So it's not in front of us. Do we ever take into account what the applicant says and put conditions on drilling or onshore and offshore and new development?
This is an issue for us, and it's somewhat dependent on the local circumstances. Okay. We'll look at it for sure. Measure C has been pending for a while, and I understand it was submitted at one point as an LCP amendment and then withdrawn. So we can certainly look at the issues in relationship to this planning process.
Okay. I was just trying to be clear. I've, in my head, I think what the commenter was saying is, gee, let's make sure we don't have an offshore or onshore oil facility as part of this development.
That might have been implied.
Yeah, is that what you picked up as well? Yeah. Okay. I was just trying to understand
you're
that.
You're on it today, man.
Yeah, well, I'm a little slow. Didn't have my coffee.
All right, thank you. Jim Tarbell, then George Reinhardt, then Amy Wynn. And that's those are all the speaker slips that I have.
Good morning. My name is Jim Tarbell. I'm an associate with the Noyo Headlands Unified Design Group. We're a local citizens group. We've become known as the Nudge Group because we're nudging the city and Georgia Pacific and now, of course, the California Coastal Commission to make sure that the right thing happens out there in the mill site, that the final reuse really maximizes the benefits to the people, the local economy, and the environment, and that we're convinced we can do, achieve all three of those. We're, of course, very excited you've come up here this week to investigate this project. And it was great that you had a wonderful tour of the mill site yesterday. We really saw the whole thing. It was the first time I've really been able to see the whole thing like that. And it's been 10 years since Georgia Pacific mill closed in Fort Bragg. And this has been, and as you could tell from some of the comments, particularly yesterday, will continue to be a long and complex process. But we're confident that at the end, the reuse of the mill site can fulfill our dreams. Now, we've been working on this project since 2003, and we've produced several different publications which are of interest. Our first one was called the Noyo Headlands Design Strategies for a Sustainable Future. It looked at, it was a long study, it was funded by a $50,000 grant we received to do it, and it looks at re-inhabiting and revegetating that mill site. Our next publication we produced the next year was called Noyo Headlands, From the Extraction Economy to the Restoration Economy. We really see this mill site redevelopment as a model of how we can move in this world, in the world we live in, from depending on extraction of natural resources to really restoring our communities and our economies to a sustainable future. In 2009, when the city and GP came and presented to the Coastal Commission for the first time, we produced this midterm report card on Georgia Pacific's plan for the Fort Bragg mill site. It wasn't exactly a popular publication. People apparently don't like getting report cards. But we felt it was important for us to weigh in on the initial Georgia Pacific plan, and we had sent it to all the commissioners at that time. I think a lot of you were not there then and are new, and we'd be happy to present any of these publications to you if you're interested. What we've been working on since 2009 is really an alternative plan. You can see that in some of the newsletters that we've produced. These are all available on our website at noyoheadlands.org. And I'm very glad you're here. And if you have any questions, we'd love to talk to you about that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. George Reinhardt, then Amy Wynn. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is George Reinhardt. I am also an associate with Nudge. Welcome to the ever-changing, beautiful Mendocino Coast. It was wonderful to tour the mill site yesterday with members of our community, the Coastal Commission, and all the other wildlife out there. As you were able to see, there is an extraordinary opportunity here. Where some may see a non-performing asset, that is a nuisance in a quarterly report, we see restoration and the revitalization of our coastal ecosystem. That is the natural ecosystem as well as the economic ecosystem. From Nudge's point of view, the priority is clear. The restoration of the natural world is the most important work of our age. It is often said that the only constant in life is change. When Georgia Pacific decided to no longer pay for the planning process and focus on the cleanup issues, this was a big deal for our community. It is also a great opportunity. We can now look at a far smaller footprint than is proposed in the specific plan. The community wishes for a green, sustainable reuse that provides jobs and improves the quality of life here on the coast will be achieved with a much smaller project. The growing awareness of worldwide climate change and the opportunities to be found in restoration for carbon sequestration will be economic drivers. More open space is a job creator. Careful planning for the post-fossil fuel realities of our future will enhance the value of everything we do here on the coast. The city of Fort Bragg has shown extremely exemplary leadership, engaging with GP, securing the coastal trail with additional parkland, and laying the groundwork for the Noyo Center. This has kept the process moving forward. Finally, as we see here today, Fort Bragg's close communication with the Coastal Commission has been a very good move. We thank you for coming, and we really appreciate the opportunities to speak. Our alternative plan is also available on our website, and we would be happy to answer any questions you may have. And thanks so much for coming to our community. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Amy Nguyen.
Thank you. My name is Amy Nguyen. I'm here this time as a land use consultant. I help people navigate the planning process, and I live north of Fort Bragg. I want you to look at this site. We've been looking at the Fort Bragg specific plan in balance of development with open space. We look at the mill site in balance with the city of Fort Bragg. It's a third of the size of the city. Remember when you were looking at your Google Maps for finding out where on earth is Casper and how do you get here? Remember all that green? That is Mendocino County. We are largely open space. It's timberland, forest land. We need a balance, whatever that may be, between jobs and our natural environment. We strive, our community, as you've met everybody over the last 3 days here and at receptions, et cetera, we're really savvy. We know what we're doing. We care deeply about the environment. We want to protect the environment. We also need to be self-sufficient and find a way to survive and thrive out here. With timber and fishing going down, we can't just rely on visitor accommodating services. We need more. We have vast amounts of natural resources surrounding the city. The city, our big city, 7,000 people, serves, 17,000 people between Westport. We almost got there yesterday, but it was too far away. And Elk, we did get there. Still far away. We only could turn around, right? That's our open space. We can explore in many, many places. There will be a balance here on the site because this has been a very, very public process. When a plan comes to you guys to review for staff and for approval here, we hope that it'll be a very efficient review because it will have been so deeply and thoroughly vetted by these incredible thinkers at the city and in our communities. Please keep in mind that we are on the edge here. It's basically a coastal island. It took an hour and a half to get here from the most dense areas of Mendocino County. We need to be self-sufficient, and please keep that in mind when you review this plan when it comes before you as an LCP amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. I have no more speaker slips. I'll bring it back to staff. Do you have any additional comments?
Not at this time, but we'd welcome any input from the commissioners.
Thank you.
Excuse me, I handed in my slip yesterday, and obviously it didn't get to you.
I don't have one.
Well,
go ahead, and would you please fill out a speaker slip for today when you're done?
I gave it to
you. Well, it's okay. Do it now and then.
Just speak.
Okay.
Speak and then give us a speaker slip when you're done.
My name is Sheila Dawn Tracy, and I want to again thank you for coming here and for your on-site inspection. I wasn't able to go on the tour yesterday, but I have been on the mill site through a bus tour, and personally, I was moved to tears at the barrenness of the site. Being a lumber industry, all the trees have been removed, and it is essential in light of global climate change that we address this and we restore the mill site back to the condition it was in when we received it from the indigenous peoples. So historical photographs need to be consulted, and we need to move the plan in that direction. I also want to say that no one has spoken today about remediation. I am very concerned with the situation where GP has had a lot of direction in this, and they have pulled out of the agreements with the city for development and financial support, but they have had a lot of impact in directing the process of the specific plan. Remediation to me is the founding block of development. And although I've had a really wonderful relationship with the senior hazardous substance scientist, Tom Lamfer, I believe that his estimates of the allowable tolerance levels of toxics that, you know, that can be remediated, that the levels are not realistic because they don't include that this town has been harmed over 30 years with toxic pollutants, that they also don't consider that despite the overwhelming resistance of the public for that contaminated dump site at Cypress that was supposed to last 100 years and was taken out in 2 years, that was pushed through by GP, by the City Council, and approved by the Coastal Commission in 2009, we see that the experts really don't have a hold on this process, that they give us promises and assurances, and then they back out of them. And it turns out, as Mayor Turner said to the City Council, that we trusted the experts, and the experts were wrong. The City Council, the Department of Toxic Substances Control, and GP all ended up with egg on their face. That's Tom. That's Dave Turner's statement himself. So I want to see. I'm concerned with the levels of. I just want to finish this one thought, that with the parklands being more open space, that allows the highest level of toxics on the land, and we need to look at that. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, I'm going to close the public comment portion, and before we bring it back to the commission, I'd like to take a brief break if we could. Let's try for 5, then hopefully not much more than that. So we'll be back in just a couple minutes. Thank you.
Get home, get changed, get showered, get the kids, grab a wife, and head up to the football game.
So how far away are you from that?
Yeah. so I'm going to be pretty worn out. But, you know, with a little kid, that's not acceptable. Kids, you can't take a day off. You have to get up and out of at 6:30, I'm sure, every day.
Yeah, you went to Atlanta and went to Savannah.
Yeah.
Right, if we could get commissioners back to the dais. Could we get the commissioners back to the dais? I'd like to reconvene. Thank you. So now we're coming back to commissioners for questions and comments. And I have Commissioners Zimmer and Kinsey on my list so far. Commissioner Zimmer.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate the presentation very much, and especially after having been on the site. It's really very valuable. My only wish is that I knew for sure this would be coming back during my lifespan here on the commission. But regardless, I have some questions about the status of the processing of this plan. I do understand that GP has withdrawn their application, and therefore I'm assuming the planning support for it to proceed. And I'm wondering about what the link between the remediation plan that they are going forward with and the slides that were shown by the representative, he may want to come back, seem to end at the CEQA process. And so I don't know whether it's our staff or the city staff. There will be then an approval of the remediation plan or consideration and approval of the remediation plan by the city. And then does that come to the Coastal Commission automatically or only on appeal?
The remediation plan would be subject to coastal development permits, but it would be processed initially by the city, most likely, with an appeal to, if there is an appeal to the commission. Uh-huh.
And with respect to the discussion about all of the restoration that's going to be connected with the specific plan itself, what I was wondering about is that is some portion of restoration, I assume, will be part of the remediation plan. And I'm wondering whether there's some way to link the preparation of that restoration portion with information that will be useful to the city and to the Coastal Commission when the specific plan process does kick in or resume. Do you understand my question? It's a little awkward.
Should I go ahead and answer, Bob? Yeah. So you've asked a lot of...
I'm sorry.
State my name, Marie
Please
Jones.
Please state your name. Yeah,
I'm sorry.
We don't
director.
Have a court recorder here.
That's fine.
So it really helps us create the record. Thank
you. I hear
you.
My name's Marie Jones, and I'm the Community Development Director for the City of Fort Bragg. So you've asked a number of interrelated questions, and I have to start by saying that we don't know the answer to all those questions at this time. But I'll try and give you a sense of where I think the process may go. As I mentioned already, Georgia Pacific withdrew their application with the City of Fort Bragg for the specific plan about 3 weeks ago. It might have been 4 weeks ago. And we haven't actually had a City Council meeting on this topic yet. So I don't know what City Council's direction to staff will be. We are meeting with them on the 24th of September, and we expect to get some direction from them at that point. We have looked in at a staff level of what the cost would be to finish the specific plan, so we're going to prepare a staff report that lets them know about that. I think from this perspective of the city, there's a lot of effort and time that has gone into creation of this document. And I think in general, the community and the city is going to be loath to set it aside. I expect that we may get direction from the City Council, though, like I said, I haven't gotten that yet, to proceed with the specific plan. If we do proceed with the specific plan, we would do an EIR for that project. And that project would
include an analysis of the remediation at a programmatic level, not at a project level. There'd be a separate CEQA document that would be prepared for the remediation that would need to look at the remediation at a project level. The EIR for the specific plan would be looking at water rights, the specific plan itself. We would not be doing a tentative master plan as part of that process that was initially envisioned as part of this whole project, but with GP's withdrawal, we will not be doing a master tentative map as part of the process. So it'd be more limited, and there would be further coastal development permits and further planning processes that would need to occur after adoption of the specific plan by the city should any developer come and want to acquire a portion of the property or the property in its entirety. So this this separation would make the planning process probably last longer, but I don't think that it would be indefinite. I'm trying to remember all of your questions. And then you had a question about whether or not the specific plan situation would change the remediation goals for the site. And we've been, DTSC is following the specific plan process very closely because the ultimate land use for a particular parcel determines the cleanup level for that parcel. And they will continue to do that. They will continue to follow our process and require that the remediation meet the cleanup levels for the land uses that are designated on the land use plan. My hope is that our process, because we are so close to completion of a specific plan, I'd say we're about 90% complete. You know, the land use map itself you can argue about, and that may be tweaked, but the real chunk, the huge amount of work is really in the written document itself and all the policies that regulate and guide development on the site and the development densities and all of that. And that is pretty, you know, I would say well-formed. There were some things that we were anticipating that would be completed as part of the master tentative map that now will not be able to be completed as part of that, and so those will have to be written into new policy language in the specific plan. So there is going to be some work there. But I do expect that DTSC will follow the land use map in terms of setting remediation levels for the site. You also asked a question about restoration. And in 2009, we did have a pretty significant community planning process where we looked at the Mill Pond complex area and talked about, because of the instability of the dam and the fact that the crib wall that holds the Mill Pond up is also unstable. I mean, basically, the Mill Pond is unstable on two of its four sides, and an earthquake would fail. And the city, if we end up having ownership of that property for a long term, we're very concerned about operations and maintenance of that facility because it is a very large facility and would probably cost $40,000 or $60,000 a year to maintain. And so it has been City Council's intent from the very beginning to, if the Mill Pond goes, to have a wetland restoration project that's associated with that, that would daylight Maple Creek all the way to the beach berm. We also had a lot of conversations about the beach berm and whether or not it needs to remain or not remain. And essentially from talking to the engineers, there's such a quantity of dirt behind the beach berm. To remove it, you'd be talking about moving over 300,000 cubic yards of material, which is a very significant amount of material. And at the end of that process, you don't gain a lot from a marine environment perspective, and you lose quite a lot from a freshwater wetland perspective. That council has really embraced the concept, or sort of embraced, I don't know if I can speak for them, are willing to live with, I guess, the concept of leaving the beach berm where it is and in order to protect the wetland behind. Yeah,
thank you. Sorry, thank you for responding to that. You did say one thing that made a light bulb go off in my mind, and that is that with respect to the scope of the remediation, in some respect, is determined by the ultimate proposed use of the land. So it seems to me that whatever the environmental document is for the remediation, even if it's been split off from the specific plan, that document would probably have to cover most of the same environmental issues that you would be needing to address then separately in an EIR for the specific plan. I'm trying to figure out in my own mind how to make sure that everything that we're going to need to know is known at the appropriate time. So thank you for that. And then there was another specific question that came up in my mind as we were looking at the pond. And so is that area considered to be a wetland now, or is it considered to be a mill pond in need of remediation? Because there's conversation that we would have to have a buffer less than 100 feet because of the road configuration that is planned. So what is the specific status of that pond now? Is that considered a wetland?
Yes. So there's two ponds. Pond 8, which is the much larger pond that's filled with reeds where you don't see any clear water, that's an 8-acre pond, and that's the pond that needs remediation. Pond 5, also known as the firefighting pond, was the one where we stopped and where I talked about the 50-foot buffer. That pond actually was never used for any industrial processes. It was just used to store water for firefighting. And so that pond actually does not require any remediation.
And then the last question, I was appreciative of hearing how well your city seems to have been communicating with our staff in developing this. What I didn't see here is a specific, what I would call an environmental constraints map for the property. And I guess one concern I would have would be to make sure very early in the process that the city's definitions of what resources exist and what the constraints are consistent with the Coastal Commission's view of those. I mean, wetlands is one example that sometimes local agencies use a definition that is narrower than the one the commission staff will use. And just in terms of anticipating issues that could be a problem later if those definitional questions aren't resolved.
Yeah, well, as we have an LCP and we administer coastal development permits all the time within the city, we're very conscious of the Coastal Commission's definition of a wetland. And, in fact, the map that was part of your tour map yesterday included all the Coastal Commission Act wetlands on it. And we have been very closely communicating with Bob about those. So, we're very conscious of basically all the wetlands out there are Coastal Act wetlands, and there's nothing else. We found them, I think, for large
part. And I hope the same would apply to habitat.
Cultural resources, habitat, views, all of that,
Because I was surprised. I thought we were driving through a parking lot that had weeds growing through it, and then I counted 5-6 deer. And so we're not aware of, you I'm sure are, but we're not necessarily aware of the wildlife. So thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Commissioner Kinsey.
Thank you. Let's see. I'll ask Marie some questions as well, and then perhaps to the staff. But first, I want to thank you and the city of Fort Bragg and the community that surrounds you for being so kind to all of us as commissioners and taking the time to give us the tour that we had this week. It was really an exceptional opportunity to see this significant piece of your city. In terms of the trail that you mentioned, I was just curious as to whether the development of it, which you say you expect to occur next year, will be able to be connected on the north and the south, or will it have to have an intermittent break there until you resolve those areas around the ponds?
Yes, it will have an intermittent break, probably for around 5 years. We went ahead with the development of the North and South Trail knowing that was going to happen just because of the great community interest in having it happen, and frankly because Prop 84 funds came available a year and a half ago, and we were very successful in getting a $4.85 million grant to make the project happen.
I also heard in comments today there were some concerns about gentrification and the disparity between one side of the road and the other. And I just am curious as to whether Fort Bragg has any inclusionary policies around affordable housing when development occurs. Does a certain percentage set aside for that purpose?
We do. We have a 15% inclusionary housing requirement for all development. And we also, for single-family development, require that 30% of the units have second units, which would provide affordable housing as well and senior housing.
And then I'll ask a question that I'd be interested in your thoughts, but also our staff's thoughts on this, which is, given the substantial size of this property and its relationship to the existing gridded town design and layout, and the incremental build-out that you were describing, has there been a consideration of just keeping more of a bubble diagram commitment and then doing more specific planning in areas that you think would be the sort of most likely to be developed first, leaving more specific planning for the future? Have you thought of it in those terms as you go?
Yes, Steve, we did. We actually went through a phase in 2010 where we had kind of a mixed-use zone with a bubble diagram. And really in conversation with the Coastal Commission staff and our own city council, we felt that it left too much vagueness in the project. In the specific plan itself, it's very carefully delineated how development would be allowed to occur on the site, that it would have to occur from east to west and from north to south, and development could not happen in the southern portion of the site if it could be accommodated in the northern portion of the site. So City Council has been very conscious of the slow-paced integration of this project with the city. One of the earlier plans actually included curvilinear streets, and we heard really quickly that that was not the right approach because it would make it feel like you'd have two separate towns. The rest of the city is really laid out rectilinearly, so square blocks, and that's what the plan now reflects as well. So the idea is to not have an old town, new town feel. Certainly some of that's going to be inevitable just by the nature of construction, but I think we've had some developments in the coastal zone, maybe in the 80s or the 90s, that didn't really reflect the vernacular of Fort Bragg's development, and we learned from that. And so we have very comprehensive citywide design guidelines now that would apply to the entire city as well as this mill site, so that the development on the mill site would have to reflect really the character of the rest of the city of Fort Bragg. Mind you that there were some projects that were done in the 70s and 80s that were not eager to replicate, and those are not in the development guidelines.
Very good. Thank you. And then to our staff, as it relates to that, the idea of not pushing to such levels of specificity that may not see their build out for decades to come.
Yeah, that has, as Marie indicates, it has been a concern. How do you specify things at this point when you know that development is going to be many years in the future? You know, other strategies we've talked about is maybe incorporating, as there is now, a requirement that before the entire mill site is rezoned, that there be a specific area plan process. We've talked about the concept of maybe taking parts of the southern area and perhaps requiring a further planning effort in the future when the time's more appropriate for development. But it's an ongoing discussion and an issue that, you know, we're going to continue to talk about with the city to grapple with how do you plan for the future when the future is so uncertain in certain areas.
Yeah, for my colleagues on the commission, I just think that to sort of drive a level of detail and decision making when things may evolve so slowly that some future generation may resent having had so much conditioning imposed on it is something for us all to consider. Thank you.
Yeah, and to respond to that, if I could, Steve, the urban reserve is a 65-acre portion of the southern part where there wouldn't be development permitted for 30 years. The other challenge with the specific plan process for this site is because of the nature of the site itself and the desire to have jobs on the southern portion, housing on the northern, and an extension of the central business district in the central area, becomes a little bit of a challenge to accomplish all those goals in one small area plan. And the site itself, due to the fact that it has no sewer, water lines, road infrastructure, and ultimately we're going to have to do a lot of off-site infrastructure improvements to accommodate the development, it made, I think, sense to a degree to the community to develop, to try and figure out more of the site. And that said, I think that there are opportunities to maybe make the urban reserve larger if that's something that you're thinking we need to do. The other thing that staff has been thinking about is this plan horizon was a 30-year plan horizon.
we could look at a 20-year plan horizon instead and back out some of the development that way. That might be a more simple way of doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, from my point of view, what the community needs most is that unique economic development engine, and you know, it might even be problematic if you prevented economic development for 30 years, if in fact that's going to be the driver that will actually fund the infrastructure for the residential development to follow. So I would be cautious about cutting off your own self-interest because you want to have kind of development to occur in an orderly way within the site area itself. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Caldwell.
Thank you. So my concerns flow really nicely from that discussion, and they center largely around the whole issue of infrastructure. And as we learned yesterday through the great discussion about water supply, that is remains a major concern and uncertainty with respect to this site. And so I would be strongly urging an urban water management plan that allows for compliance with SB 610 and SB 221 that would really allow you to probe those uncertainties and understand how much water you really have to work with to support development on this site or various uses on the site. Similarly, I'm just interested in your sewer treatment capacity and also your non-point source runoff treatment capacity. I think that in keeping with the resource conservation policies of the Coastal Act, we'd be very interested in green infrastructure there and using restored ecosystem elements such as constructed wetlands and reforestation to treat urban water runoff. And you described that that was already an issue, so I know that that's top of mind. The other issue that Ms. Jones brought up yesterday and was eager to get some feedback from the commissioners on was this whole issue of that constricted area between Pond 5 and the entranceway and the question of a buffer. So the question I would just have back to staff and to the community is, what are the alternatives to putting a road there? And I'm also really interested in this whole question of the nexus between the cleanup levels and the land use planning zoning that you have, that a specific plan actually would require in the future, and the degree to which the state is looking at this current specific plan to help guide the cleanup levels. So the question that I would have is, for areas, say, like the urban reserve or the business district, if the cleanup levels for those areas actually conform to a lower standard, would that preclude you from, in the future, zoning those areas for something like recreation or residential? And if so, that's really important to know. And finally, I have to say that I was really struck myself as well with the question of the degree to which this does really embrace and connect with the existing community. And, you know, just on the map, the existing community is grayed out, and so it's really hard to see that. But it does feel very much like a separate community, and I know that we received some testimony to that effect. So it's really, even having been on the site, it is difficult to envision how it really connects with the community and embraces the existing community. And I think I'll just stop there. Thank you.
Do you want me to respond to any of those? Or?
All right, thank you. Commissioner Brennan.
Well, thank you. Commissioner Caldwell, you could continue. But that was wonderful. I'll just tail on to the very end of that. I do think that, first of all, I want to thank everybody that's put in the time and energy into the planning process and all those meetings that have gone on ahead of time. Certainly Georgia Pacific was probably the little engine that was pulling that along. Now we've got to determine, I know your city council's got to figure where they take advantage of or where they find the funding to continue such an effort or to go back and relook at it. I think my fellow commissioners have stated about the infrastructure needs. I think that is huge, and I think Commissioner Caldwell said it very well. It's almost like you should do an assessment of what infrastructure could actually happen within that area and would help dictate some of the development that goes on there. I think I'm looking at this wonderful letter from the Headlands Unified Design Group. I think they have brought some really good comments into place. I think that, in my mind, in my background as a citizen planner for 30, 40 years and very active in the smart growth movement and been through the program at the University of Maryland, they hit on a lot of the things that I think that a model smart growth community or sustainable community would really be all about. And I think what you have is an opportunity to perhaps become a demonstration site. And people would actually, you're wondering what's going to bring people here. I think what's going to bring people here in a sustainable manner in getting here is going to be what you're doing here and how you've laid your town out and how it's interacted and the future, what happens. I struggle all the time on my council with, you know, making decisions for planning the whole city. For the next, you know, in 2 years, I get to plan the city that's going to go for 40 to 60 to 80 years. And so I think there's nothing wrong with being able to hold some things back and do it on a timeline. But I know something's got to pull that wagon. And I think Commissioner Kinsey talked a little bit about the economic piece of that works. But I'm thinking that in both my past have been very active in the Smart Growth America. This is almost a natural model for them to perhaps embrace and look at some kind of a partnership in terms of funding with you. And then the National Brownfields Program, which I was involved in too, this is another classic case of an opportunity to perhaps maybe look for funding for the City Council to be able to embrace. And now that Georgia Pacific stepped away, is maybe you've got some bones there. Maybe now you can, the Council and the Unified Design Group can start putting some flesh on it. This may be more of the sustainable model. One of the things I certainly would like you to perhaps consider in that model is looking at maybe not so much, and we all get excited about luxury hotels and 450-room hotels and things like that, but I think maybe looking in the area of more of the hostel type of environment that, again, can be done very well. And I know all of us, we all collect, maybe not here in Casper, you wouldn't want to travel anywhere else. You guys live in paradise, but all the rest of us travel a lot, and maybe you see the evolving of the hostile type of infrastructure, and it's not what we traveled through Europe back 30, 40 years ago. It's very different and very somewhat comfortable and laid out very differently. But I think that would allow you perhaps to get going and get started in some of that area and also be able to attract visitors that in a way that we heard earlier about the two-wheeled kind. And I've got to say that I myself would, I think the best way to see this coast is on two wheels, because you can stop and see the different things that are going by instead of having to concentrate on the road all the time, if it was much safer. So I think you have an opportunity, again, to incorporate that two-wheeled opportunity in there. So I know I'm just rambling a little bit because a lot of it's been said, but I think that the infrastructure, going back to that, really dictates where you need to go. And then also I would only in closing say that, you know, you have an opportunity with the rail line there. I know it kind of divides the city a little bit too, but I mean, rail is a way of the future. And there's electric rail that's the Colorado train, as I was mentioned to somebody. Actually, it's in the Denali National Park in Alaska. It's used in Colorado. And that is, it's actually the engine that you ride on. It's just like a skateboard platform with electric motors underneath, and it holds up to 60 passengers. I think something along that line of use in terms of transit would maybe help, and certainly would free up a little more space for the two-wheeled bicycle rider. So thank you for the opportunity for input, and I think you've got a great, great canvas here. And I know trying to find something to pull the wagon is really a challenge. But if you are interested in Smart Growth America, the deputy director is a close friend and a former mayor of my city, Bill Fulton. You might just write him a letter, and I'm going to forward the information you've given to me to him to just see if they can sow a few seeds back there for you, because you have a incredible opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner McClure.
Thank you. I have a couple of specific questions in relationship to the remediation. And it's been alluded to, but I don't understand that apparently there are different levels of remediation that will be required, which tells me that there will be problems that are left behind that the lumber company is not required to clean up. That because it's going to be for recreation or it's going to be for open space, they don't have to get rid of all of the chemicals and the destruction that they have left in the wake of this property. So I need to understand what that means when you talk about remediation and remediation at specific levels. So that would be my first question. And then my second is an observation. And I recognize that Mendocino has incredible open space. I live in a part of the world that has incredible open space. But I also recognize that this plan doesn't have enough open space for me. So I just want to kind of throw that out there. And I'm a little uneasy about the daylighting of the creek, because I would like to see that happen. But I know that lumber companies are notorious that, you know, in the 1900s, if they had an extra locomotive that they didn't want to deal with, they would just put it in the pond. And so I know the poison that has gone into the pond, and how are we going to remediate those ponds in order to open up to daylight that creek? Because to me, daylighting that creek and putting back in that actual configuration of what the land looked like would be a monumental job to get done, and it would be incredible. But at the same time, if it's levels of restoration that we're talking about as far as getting rid of the harm that's there, I would like some explanation of how you determine where you're going to clean up and where you're not going to clean up.
Thank you. Tim Murphy, Georgia Pacific. I think I would just invite specific questions like that to Tom Lamphar, project manager for the DTSC. He's probably the best person to answer it. I apologize, I'm the real estate guy and not the remediation guy delivering the remediation message, but we're working closely under order with the DTSC, and Tom is the project manager and closest to it for the state.
And while Tom's coming up here, I'll just make a few points of clarification. One of the things to keep in mind is that probably about 80% of the site is clean enough for any use, and that's the whole area that was shown as green. So the parts that remain contaminated are parts around the Mill Pond Complex area and just basically to the west of the downtown area. And those are the parts that need to be remediated. And with that, Tom, you want to come on up here and...
Good morning. My name is Tom Lanfarm with the California Department of Toxic Substances Control. I'm the project manager at the Georgia Pacific Mill site. And I believe your question is the various levels of cleanup that we might do based on the land use. And in the past, the development of the site-specific plan and the development and the study of the contamination and the remediation were very closely linked. Our determination for remediation, the CEQA documentation for that was going to be the same as for the site-specific plan. We're trying to understand now how we will incorporate our decisions with a site-specific plan that may not be finished when we're making our decision. There's a few ways that we could approach that, though. One is that we are a risk-based agency. We make our decisions based on scientific research and understanding of the risk. For example, in operable unit A, you saw the presentation that Tim made, that the site was divided into five operable units. Operable unit A is, and the operable unit is how we organize the land to make a decision. So A was the coastal trail area, and that was determined to be a passive recreational use. The risk assessments and the cleanup decisions were made to support and to protect those who might be using that land for that use. So it was based on recreation. What we do understand, though, at the mill site, that we will have residential use, we will have industrial use, we'll have commercial, we will also have recreational use. We have receptors that will be human, that may live there or work there. We also have receptors that are the critters that are going to be, that live there now. We saw those, the deer there yesterday. We saw the osprey, the photograph of the osprey. So we have a understanding of what is there now and what may come in the future. We can establish a remedial action plan that we call as menu-driven, so we know that there'll be residential, commercial, recreational, and so on. We can establish a plan that determines what is the safe level, a risk-based level for all of those different land uses. Residential is usually the most protective. However, sometimes the ecological receptors are more sensitive and require a much higher level of cleanup. Okay, so if we have a remedial action plan, let me phrase this too. Operable units C and D, we've completed a feasibility study that looked at alternatives for cleanup. Operable unit E right now, which is the mill pond complex, we focused a lot on that yesterday. We are completing the remedial investigation report, and then we'll go to the feasibility study to look at alternatives for the cleanup. The ecological receptors are really driving, one of the drivers for that cleanup there. All three of those operable units will then have a remedial action plan, and I believe that with our schedule looking like late 2013 or 2014 for the remedial action plan, because we have to still complete a risk assessment for the operable unit E and the feasibility study. Okay. When we come to the remedial action plan, if we don't have a specific plan, we could still design and make our decision based on the foreseeable reuse of the mill site. As I said, residential, industrial, commercial, open space, recreational. We could have a menu driven, says, well, if it's going to be residential, the cleanup will have to meet a certain standard, commercial, a different standard. And then as the plan unfolds and development happens, then the cleanup would have to meet that at that time. Unless there is something that's more immediate that requires attention now. We have had some interim cleanups, and we may have more interim cleanups in the future. But we also have a process or a plan and documents, a site management plan or a soil management plan, sometimes they're called. So as with a brownfields development, sometimes the cleanup and the development happen together. So as you're digging the utilities, you're digging the foundations, you're moving dirt around, you're doing the cleanup at that point. So if we do have a menu-driven residential, industrial, as the development happens, those are coordinated, and the cleanup levels are directed by the reuse. But we've already established those in remedial action plan that happened prior to the finalization of the plan.
Okay. We are losing our quorum, but as this is an informational item, only a workshop, hopefully you're getting the information you need. I would like to make sure that we continue and wrap this up. This is our last item of the day in any case. Other commissioners like to comment? I'm going to take the opportunity then to weigh in a little bit. I think with the change with Georgia Pacific pulling out also gives the community an opportunity to to look at and rethink this, but you're also going to have to rethink sort of funding from a planning standpoint, but also from a development standpoint, as you well know. For me as well, this is such a great site and it's so large that I think there are other opportunities in here for more open space. And what's interesting, given the planning horizon that you have here, I'm trying to visualize how this will be over the 20 to 30 years that it's going to build out. And that process as well could lead to success or future troubles, I think. Because starting with the western edge, I think the more open space that can be built in there is probably preferable. And you have a real opportunity to move gracefully from a really beautiful coastline in towards the city's structure. So if, as you're planning and starting to do develop, if you move then from the existing developments and then move sort of westward, that also gives you, you may find a balance of open space and development in there over time. So I would hope that whatever plans that you do would be able to facilitate that. And also, I think if you allow certain features to come in that then become isolated from the town, that potentially undermines the flow and the ability for the citizens and for people viewing this area to understand kind of the future or the connectivity that's there. So I think there's a potential flow over that time that might very well be important. But you also do have some potential restrictions with respect to infrastructure and roads and all of that, and the sort of managing and dealing with the toxics too. I share other commissioners' concerns that unless those get addressed at the maximum extent now, and I know that's going to be a resource issue as well, that may preclude the plan from ultimately being implemented down the line if it's not cleaned up to an appropriate level, given that this plan will probably change to some extent over the next 30 years anyway. And I understand the amount of space that's been left for future planning, but I would be a little bit concerned about that. Some of it seems aggressive or ambitious. I'm not quite sure, as it's been spoken, what the jobs are going to look like, where they're going to come from. 450 hotel rooms seems like a lot for this stretch, and I'm not, given the fact that most people that I've talked to here relish in the isolation, that also I think makes larger scale development questionable for somebody coming in to be able to implement. Again, leading to more open space. And I would hope that as areas are not developed, or if you have a plan for sort of migrating the development from east to west, that much of the rest of that does get left accessible open space and in ways that can be used, because this does seem like an area that the patterns of use and the patterns of expectations may change over time, and probably much to the benefit of the region, the area, certainly, and the community. All right. Commissioner O'Connor.
Just want to add, I think you really captured well where my thoughts, too, about how the West and the East coming together on this plan, and how the existing of the western side, the less developed, the shoreline, you know, how that's managed and planned, and then the existing grid of the city, how that comes together and the opportunity there. One thing I wanted to add, Commissioner Brennan had mentioned the two-wheelers, bicycling, and just recently I saw some material that up just north in the state of Oregon, the tourism outreach they're doing in terms of bicycling. And I know that you want to diversify the economic base here in the area, but still tourism is obviously going to be a key, similar to my city, in my town city, Santa Monica. And it's just the growth in interest in bicycle tourism and the kinds of facilities that support that. I mean, you have some of that already, and how that can be just embraced in a greater way. You have great opportunity here for that. And I'm still new to the watershed. I come from more of a urban planning type of background, but the comments by Commissioner Caldwell on the water supply and water were really compelling and interesting. to me. Thank you. Oh, and just finally, this could be my last meeting. I don't know. I'm an alternate. But I really just want to say I really felt incredibly lucky to be able to come up here to Mendocino and Fort Bragg and Casper to see the area. And I know that it just, hopefully I can come back, but I don't know if I will. But regardless, it just the opportunity it's offered to us to a commission, any commission one would be on, both as individuals as well as the opportunity for people who are decision makers and the others to be here and to be in this place. And my background's in historic preservation, so I'm especially thrilled to be in a wonderful space that has this kind of character and see the town. So just want to thank you all for your hospitality to me and to the, and all the other commissioners, I'm sure, have said that and will say that. So thank you.
Thank you. Other commissioner comments? All right, seeing none, I hope that was helpful, providing at least some level of guidance. I think this is, for something as significant as this development is going to be for Fort Bragg and for the Mendocino Coast, this is a good opportunity to have us come out and take a look at the site, but also provide some feedback into your thinking, and I do understand things are a bit in flux as well. So we really appreciate the opportunity. Mr. Mayor?
Could I make one last comment? I want to respond to Commissioner Kinsey. He postulated something that we have talked about, and I wanted to relate that.
Please.
Just a moment. Commissioner Kinsey, when you talked about who knows what's going to come and we might be constricting the possibilities, we've built into our rough draft what we call the big idea, which would allow if some company came in and said, we want to do this, but we need this place here in this, what we're calling that urban reserve, that we can take some of what we talked about, space over in our commercial area, and take it away from there and put it to there, so that it had a, triggers, like it had to be good paying jobs, and it would have to be something the council would say, okay, this is the big idea, this is good paying jobs, so now here's this, you can have that space. So just to let you know that we didn't want to, we wanted to make room that, because as I said earlier, we're just not smart enough to know. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Very good. Thank you. All right. Thank you. Is there anything further from staff?
I don't think so. Just to thank everyone and thank the city for the opportunity to have this briefing, and we'll keep tracking it and bring back to you updates as necessary.
Okay. That does bring us to the close of our meeting. I certainly want to thank all the folks from the Mendocino Coast, Fort Bragg, and Casper for hosting us here. We certainly have felt very welcome. I think all of us intend to come back here individually, and hopefully, certainly, we can come back as a commission as well. A special thanks to all the Casperados for, again, taking great care of us. This has been a very nice facility to be in and gives us a chance to see the coast that we are all charged with protecting. So thank you all very much, and we'll all reconvene next month. We are adjourned.